You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, April the 4th, the day after Election Day. And as we heard in state news, Washington County Judge Annette Zegler soundly defeated Madison attorney Linda Clifford in the race for state Supreme Court justice. Zegler tallied 58% of the vote to Clifford's 42%. Zegler will take over for the retiring Justice John Wilcox on August 1st. Zegler said in her victory speech that she believed that her victory was in part the public's rejecting negative campaigning. Is that what you think, too? We're going to talk about the race for state Supreme Court justice, the results of that race, and why it happened, what it means, and whether any reforms are called for after what some are saying has been perhaps the nastiest race for state Supreme Court ever run, and it certainly was a race that broke records for spending. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere you're listening, your reaction to the results in the state Supreme Court justice race. Your questions for our guest in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Herbert Kritzer, Professor of Political Science and Law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what's your reaction to this this outcome?
The outcome in many ways is not particularly surprising. Judge Zegler had a very, very large lead in the primary election, and it was probably relatively unlikely that Clifford would be able to come back from the large gap at that time. So in some ways, it's not at all surprising.
Yeah.
It is a type of election where name recognition is very, very central to outcomes, and Judge Zegler's ability to spend considerably more in campaigning would also assist her in getting her name out there to the voters. So when voters walked in,
do you have it handy how much more she spent than Clifford?
The news reports are something on the order of 3 or 4 to 1, but I haven't seen any official reports.
Yeah. But we did see lots of ads from Clifford's campaign and those who support the outside groups that supported Clifford really hammering away at Zegler's alleged conflicts of interest with the cases that she sat on involving a bank that her husband is on the board of directors and other cases where she held stock in the companies. That didn't matter.
Well, on the other side, Judge Zegler's campaign hammered at Linda Clifford's lack of experience as a judge and other aspects of her background and experience. So the hammers were beating both directions.
Oh, certainly. Does the outcome then tell us that the public cares more that a judge is sitting on the court or that they recognized her name more than the other? What does it tell you?
It tells me more one of name recognition and more one of, well, she is a judge, so she's got experience. My guess is that that's much more likely what was going on in the voters' minds in this election than hearing lots of the specifics in terms of the charges and countercharges.
Yeah, Zegler, in her victory speech last night, said, "I think the voters made clear that they reject negative campaigns, that those don't work, and instead they want someone who sits on the court who has experience as a judge and experience in criminal law." You think so?
Yes and no. I think certainly the voters respond to the title judge as an indicator of somebody who's got experience. I think the irony of the criminal law part of the campaign and a lot of both the claims of experience and the challenge to Judge Zegler's record in sentencing in certain types of cases misses the fact that the state Supreme Court's docket is relatively low on criminal cases, about a quarter of the cases currently pending before the Wisconsin Supreme Court are criminal cases. Roughly three-quarters are not. So that's not the central part of what the court does. It's always one of the surprising things about Supreme Court elections. They often hear a lot about how people will deal with crime and criminal cases, and that's just not the central part of what the state Supreme Court does.
Yeah. Clifford was endorsed by a number of newspapers. I know both Madison newspapers, the Milwaukee newspaper, some others around the state, I don't have all of them in front of me, did endorse Clifford, in part some saying, hey, this is not even close. Judge Ziegler has these conflicts of interest, and there's some questionable things here. That didn't necessarily sway voters either.
Well, it may say a lot more about newspapers and the role of newspapers in contemporary society than it says about the voters' response to what the newspapers said in terms of people. You know, how many people read those endorsements at this point? What are the subscription rates for the newspapers in the communities? Newspapers are declining in influence generally and as a source of news.
We're talking with Herb Kritzer. He's a professor of political science and law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're discussing the results in the state Supreme Court race and also talking about the campaign that led up to it and whether or not, we'll talk a little bit more after the weather break, whether or not there's any reforms that can be put in place to avoid the type of spending and the negative aspects of this particular campaign. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your reactions, your questions for our guest in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, April the 4th. We're talking election results this hour, specifically for the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court, where Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler soundly defeated Madison attorney Linda Clifford yesterday, winning a seat on the state Supreme Court. Ziegler had 58% of the vote, Clifford 42%. Why did Ziegler win? What does it mean for the court? What do you think of the campaign? We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I did lose a caller, Professor Kritzer, who wanted to say that she did not vote because she was so turned off by the tone of this campaign. I'm sorry we can't find out a little bit more about what she had to say, but I'm wondering if you think that that was a common problem this time around.
Yeah, that's hard to tell. I mean, the turnout for these elections in the spring are typically fairly low, and they're driven not by the Supreme Court election, but more likely by what's going on in the local campaigns. They're not a large number of people who choose to come and vote precisely because there is a judicial Supreme Court election. They come to vote in other elections, and voting in the Supreme Court is usually a byproduct. One of my colleagues estimated that maybe 1 or 2% of the turnout, or 1 or 2 percentage increase in the turnout for if there's a Supreme Court election. So how much impact that actually had, it's hard to tell. The turnout figures that I've seen aren't bad for this time, this kind of election. The weather in some parts of the state yesterday was pretty awful, particularly up north, and that probably had a lot more effect on the turnout than the campaign tone would have.
People don't generally care all that much about these races.
Well, that's one of the challenges to this, and this is we. In the United States, have a mania for electing people to offices. And so we have large, large numbers of offices that we ask people to vote for. I think there were, in Madison yesterday, 6 or 7 contested elections that I was asked to vote for, not counting the offices that were uncontested. I don't know the exact number of those because I didn't even pay attention to them going down the ballot. So we ask people to do a lot in terms of voting. And then in the nonpartisan elections, we don't give them what is the most useful piece of information that research has shown that people use, whether they like it or not. They use information about party affiliation as a cue to go into the mm-hmm. voting booth. We don't give them that kind of information. Although this time around, there was certainly efforts to link the candidates to one party or the other in terms of endorsements and telephone calls.
Yeah. And in these races, a lot of times it just comes down to often experience and resume, because the candidates running for state Supreme Court will not really talk about, you know, hot button issues or things that might really grab a voter's attention, because they might rule on cases involving those issues.
That's part of what mm-hmm. Makes the judicial elections particularly unusual. This campaign, although negative in tone, did speak to issues like resume in a very broad way, did speak to experience. That was what the candidates were hammering each other over. And you know, in a way, mm-hmm. that's what we say we want the judicial elections to be about. We don't want them to be explicitly about how judges are going to rule in particular cases. So in a sense, in this election, the voters got what it is that we say we want people to campaign on for judicial elections, albeit with a negative flavor.
Yeah. And what we got here, and I'm just to say, is the Annette Ziegler was considered, though she certainly wouldn't say she was, the conservative candidate backed by the conservative groups or Republicans, and her election. Would you say that's a fair statement, that we got the conservative candidate with Annette Ziegler?
In terms of certainly who her supporters were,
mm-hmm.
Most definitely. The automated phone calls that were coming in, I got two, both for Linda Clifford. One came from a local former Democratic state legislator. The other came from Russ Feingold, which was, you know, clearly a link to the Democratic perspective. And I suspect that the automated phone calls that were going out for Linda Clifford were for Annette Ziegler were similarly identifiable as as Republican.
And then react to State Senator Glenn Grothman in our news piece said that he was happy that Annette Ziegler won, because this stops the leftist slide of our state Supreme Court. Is that what's happening?
There's a lot of talk about that, and the reality is that the majority of cases on the Supreme Court are decided unanimously. There are some small number of cases that are closely divided, where one person's view may make a difference. The state Supreme Court in Wisconsin has been relatively evenly divided or relatively closely divided on political background, experience, ideology, perspective, whatever term you prefer, for a while, and that continues. I mean, it's roughly the same as it was with Justice Wilcox.
Yeah, Justice Wilcox was considered on the conservative side of the court, and Annette Ziegler replaces him. So the balance stays evenly divided?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
with assuming... If you treat Justice Crooks as a swing vote, which until relatively recently he wouldn't have been seen as.
All right, we'll get to some phone calls now. Jim in McGuanago, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, your guest answered part of the questions about the voter turnout. I was curious as to that. That seems like that has something to do with it. If whether or not that was down or not with this negative campaign would be interesting to track a little bit more in the future. I think the one thing I'd like to ask him to comment on, I think some of the, in addition to the negative tone of the campaign, which I think did sway against Linda Clifford out in the more in the hinterlands, it goes to the second part of my question. I think sometimes having a candidate out of Madison across the state doesn't help. And if Linda Clifford maybe could have, it would have been from, say, Oshkosh, you know, I think it she probably would have stood a better chance, which you know, that's the choice that, you know, the parties that behind are a candidate or the candidate make. And I think that had, frankly, I think that had something to do with it. I hope we don't get this negative a campaign. It turns, I think it increases voter apathy. And I, you know, I would like to see a candidate really take the high road once, and when a campaign gets negative, just say, look, I'm not getting into that. You know, I think in this case it was started by one side, and then the other side says, well, you know, I got to kind of fight fire with fire, and it turns people off.
Yeah. Professor Kritzer?
Well, the first part of the caller's comment related to the Madison effect. Mm-hmm. I suspect that without other information, voters in the hinterlands, as he said, if they hear a candidate's from Madison, make an assumption that the candidate is probably on the liberal side of the political spectrum, although that is not always the case. We have had elections where the liberal candidate, quote-unquote, was from outside Madison, and the conservative candidate had more of a Madison connection. So it's not always true, but I think the voters tend to see that. I think there is something of a contagion effect on negative campaigning. If one side does it, it's very difficult for the other side not to, particularly if the side that's doing it is seen as being advantaged by it. There are, of course, there's the wonderful example of Russ Feingold's primary victory some years ago when the two other candidates, mm-hmm, who were the front runners basically pounded each other to death in their campaigns, and Russ Feingold then kind of waltzed in at the last minute and captured the voters' backing with a positive, lighthearted kind of campaign. So, yes, that can have an effect, but it's very difficult one-on-one. Particularly one-on-one when you're battling for name recognition as much as anything else.
Thanks to Jim. Gary in Brookfield is with us now. Hi, Gary.
Hello, morning. I have a comment I would like to have is a comment on the fact that what does it say about the electorate's view on the bias/independence of judges? I think it's very clear that Linda Ziegler chose to not make it aware to people that she had a conflict of interest or to excuse herself from a decision she made, and apparently the electorate doesn't feel that's an issue.
But do you mean conflicts of interest that Annette Ziegler
had? You said Linda Ziegler, but Annette, yes, okay.
Yeah.
We only have less than a minute before a news break.
Again, I think I'm not sure to what degree, if one did a survey of voters, to what degree the voters would actually have been cognizant of that issue as opposed to simply recognizing the name. I think the dilemma is that voters don't pay a lot of attention to most of these elections. At the same time, they don't want to give up the opportunity to have a say when they want to have a say.
We will continue our discussion about the results of the race for state Supreme Court and the campaign that led up to it and other possible reforms. Is there anything that can be done to have better campaigns in the future? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Wednesday, April the 4th. Election observers say that the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court, won by Judge Annette Ziegler yesterday, could be just the beginning of a new kind of campaigning for the bench, with more and more spending by the candidates and outside groups as well. We heard in state news that the candidates and special interest groups will, when it's all tallied up, have spent probably more than $6 million on this race, three times more than usual. Ziegler easily defeated Madison attorney Linda Clifford with 58% of the vote to Clifford's 42%. Ziegler has served as a circuit court judge in Washington County for the past 10 years. She replaces the retiring justice John Wilcox and will take over on August 1st. We're talking about the race for state Supreme Court, the outcome, what it means, and possible reforms with our guest, Herb Kritzer, professor of political science and law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we welcome your reactions to the outcome and your thoughts about this race. And your questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send your question or comment via email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Linda Clifford last night said that she's not apologizing for the ads that her campaign put together, citing Judge Ziegler's records, saying that they were just raising legitimate questions about Annette Ziegler's record. Why is that, do you think, why do people consider that negative, Professor Kritzer?
Well, because it's critical. I mean, negative and critical is... If you question the other opponent's record, we're supposed to run on, judges are supposed to run on their record, or candidates on their record. If you question the record, if you challenge the record, that is in a sense negative. So it's one of the dilemmas. We talk about not liking negative campaigning, but if there's something out there that legitimately deserves or is appropriate for criticism, we label that negative. In a race where all you are supposed to run on is your qualifications and record, if one candidate raises questions about the other candidate's qualifications or record, it's going to be deemed to be negative.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it just if a record shows that a candidate did not recuse herself from cases involving a bank where her husband sits on the board of directors, wouldn't the other candidate have a legitimate reason to point that out?
I would think so. I would think that it would be appropriate to point that out. If there is somebody who is being considered for judicial office where there is a question about their handling of potential conflicts of interest, that ought to be in front of whoever is making the decision about whether the person will become a judge. There was a case, a nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court some years back, Clement Haynsworth, who was defeated in at least in part because of questions about how he had handled relatively small, relatively unimportant things that were formally conflicts of interest.
Yeah. On the other hand, how much did the information that Linda Clifford's husband is a trial attorney, how much, I don't know, harm did that do her? That Ziegler's campaign pointed out that she would be hearing cases involving malpractice and other things that her husband has worked on in the past, and that she would have a conflict of interest.
You know, I think it was less the issue of, it would have been less the issue of conflict and more the just linking her to trial lawyers, mm-hmm. to plaintiff's lawyers, because of the extensive efforts by certain groups to paint the plaintiff's bar in very negative light. That probably had more impact, if there was an impact, than the conflict of interest part of it.
Let me take another caller, John in Green Bay. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi. That was a record amount of money spent on a campaign. I wonder how much of that money was politically backed, like the Republican and Democratic Party, and do you think that's got to be a big influence on the negativity of it?
To my knowledge, the money did not come from the parties. It came from groups that are often associated with one party or the other. And so, you know, I don't think it came from the parties per se.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
What about you? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Professor Kritzer, Justice Wilcox, who is retiring, did comment on this campaign before Election Day, saying that he was very troubled by the all the spending, very troubled by all the negative nature of the campaign, and thought that reforms were called for. But it was unclear as to really what kind of reforms were called for, what could be done or should be done to avoid this kind of spending and this type of campaign. Can anything be done?
Well, there are. Depends on how far you want to go. Some states have adopted much broader-based public financing. The challenge with public financing is that if you've got candidates that don't start with a lot of name recognition, it's hard to build the name recognition. This was an election where you did not have candidates that had run for anything. In one case, a candidate had never run for office. The other candidate had run only locally for office, so they did not have even regional name recognition. If you had a judge from the Court of Appeals as a candidate, that person would have at least somewhat more regional name recognition. In those kinds of campaigns, spending is ultimately the way you get your name in front of the voters. So that's one thing that makes this election a little bit different, was the fact that it was two candidates that had very local bases. North Carolina has adopted a public financing approach, which has received some good press. I haven't seen the details. It's relatively new, so it's hard to know whether or not it will work over time. That's one thing that can be done, but as I say, the downside is that it disadvantages candidates that don't start with a lot of name recognition.
Yeah.
More extreme is to think about dropping the kind of electoral system that we use in Wisconsin. Minnesota has a very similar system, although the one big difference is that they indicate on the ballot if a judge is an incumbent in the office. We do not do that in Wisconsin. But recently, a commission in Minnesota headed by their former governor, Al Quie, has come up with a proposal to shift to a hybrid system where persons are initially appointed to office after screening by a nominating committee and then stand for what are called retention elections periodically, which essentially is just an up-down vote. It's not an election where there is a opposing candidate, but a judge runs on his or her record. The twist in Minnesota that was added would be to include some kind of a structured performance evaluation by a committee of, I believe, a non-lawyers, non-judges, a lay committee. So that's a much more radical kind of change. Wisconsin considered such a system over 30 years ago and did not go with it. So that's a possibility that would change the character of judicial selection in Wisconsin. It's a system that's used increasingly in the United States. It's not a system that's immune from negative campaigning or political influence. There have been some rather spectacular examples of judges defeated when they have, through highly negative campaigns, when they're standing in these retention elections.
We're talking with Herbert Kritzer, professor of political science and law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the race for state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, the outcome of that campaign, the nature of the campaign, welcoming your questions and comments about whether you think anything can or should be done about the nature of this particular campaign and all the money that was spent on it. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about the race for state Supreme Court in Wisconsin yesterday, where Judge Annette Ziegler defeated Madison attorney Linda Clifford with 58% of the vote to Clifford's 42%. And our next caller is Dennis in Oregon. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Professor, are you familiar with the state of Ohio and what they did in their campaigns for the Supreme Court in that state?
I'm not sure what it is that you're referring to. I do know that in Ohio, they have a quite different system in terms of partisan nomination, but nonpartisan general elections. And they've had, in recent years, fairly bitter campaigns there.
Right. And because of that, for the last elections, they put together a blue ribbon panel that approved any of the ads before they went on the air. They didn't try to limit the amount of spending, but they did try to have some say over the content of the ads because their fear was it was reflecting negatively on the entire court system. And it apparently worked pretty well, so I just didn't know whether or not you were familiar with that or could comment on that. But
I'm not familiar with it. It sounds like a really intriguing approach. I'm curious whether this is a voluntary system or in some ways it's a mandated system. I think it would be tough to mandate a system like that. But you could certainly imagine a system that where it was voluntary and there would be clear political pressure for candidates to participate in such a system.
Yeah, it seems to me I've heard about proposals along these lines, and especially broadcasters not liking a possibility that they would have to say, we're not airing this ad, but we'll air that one. That there was some proposals along those lines that broadcasters didn't like very much because they'd be the gatekeeper, but also they'd probably lose some revenue by rejecting some ads.
Well, they would certainly lose revenue if they lost ad time.
Mm-hmm.
The system the caller described sounds like that it is an outside committee of some sort, whether sitting judges, whether appointed by the Supreme Court or jointly by Supreme Court and somebody else that does the screening, and so that presumably the candidates would then withdraw an ad that didn't pass muster with this committee. Alternatively, I guess you could have a system where the local broadcasters were asked to decline to run such ads, and that would raise the problem you just described.
Yeah. Thank you, Dennis. James in Madison is next. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Earlier, your guest had indicated concern in terms of a negative ad as to the charge itself. I guess my view is that it is not so much the charge, whether it be accurate, fair, or not. It is the context in which it is presented. The ads on both sides were more like trailers for horror movies. The way the candidate was photographed, and sometimes even the background sounds.
Yeah.
And so, again, I think it's fair enough to lay out a charge or a statement of facts that may not necessarily be negative, but the context in which they are presented is what makes it negative.
Certainly there is that aspect to it. How the ad is done in terms of the visual qualities, the production values, and the like. I was certainly struck in looking at some of the ads about the way that was done to try to present something to make something sound even perhaps more negative than it was. Of course, there is a long tradition in American electoral advertising of doing precisely those kinds of things. The Willie Horton ads, the classic, of course, was the 1964 ad with the nuclear explosion and the countdown. So there is a long tradition and history in American political advertising of trying to come up with visuals that really communicate beyond the words of the message.
We actually have received a number of emails about a specific ad that ran, if not by Ziegler's campaign, on behalf of her campaign. I don't know if it was her campaign or one of the outside interest groups. This email, while portraying herself as prim, perky, pert, and pretty, Ziegler's first commercial not only denigrated Clifford's physical appearance, but it was posed with a werewolf sound. that shocked and embarrassed even some Republicans in this supposedly nonpartisan race. Do you recall if that ad was Ziegler's?
Yeah, I don't recall who sponsored that ad,
yeah.
But I certainly saw that ad, and I was immediately struck by again it presented Linda Clifford visually in a very negative way, and then cut to this prim, very proper presentation of Annette Ziegler. So, yeah, I noted that ad. It struck me as.
And then this,
unfortunately, probably quite effective.
Yeah, this a particular emailer, and again, we've received more than a few along these lines. I guess I just like your reaction to it. We are obliged to abide by the wisdom and judgment of the Wisconsin electorate, but the election of Annette Ziegler to a 10-year term on the Wisconsin Supreme Court is appalling. If anyone's campaign for office should have prompted voters to support an opponent, it was Ziegler's. Do you just want to react to that?
Well, I'm not sure what reaction you're asking for. The campaign did have a very strong negative overtone. Supporters of Annette Ziegler, if the election had come out the opposite way, might have said similar things about Linda Clifford's ads. So there was negativity on both sides in this election. One of the questions is, you know, is this the first of what's going to be a series of election campaigns that have this kind of tone? We have seen election campaigns in the past in Wisconsin for the court that had fairly strong negative overtones, perhaps not as strong as this. So it's not unprecedented. What really is different this time is the flooding, a relative flooding of the airwaves with campaign ads. It seems, states have differed in how this is developed. One of the reasons for the commission in Minnesota that I referenced a little while ago is a concern that campaigns in Minnesota might go this direction, though they haven't really done so to date. On the other hand, in the state of Washington, another state that uses nonpartisan elections, some of the elections in recent years have been extremely partisan, extremely heavy in campaign expenditures to try to communicate political positions, preferences of candidates. And is Wisconsin heading that direction? It's hard to know for sure based on one election. We have had other elections in which there were fairly strong partisan overtones given the candidates that were running.
Let me try to fit in another caller or two. Doug and Poinette, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering if, since Annette Ziegler is apparently under investigation for conflict of interest, if it's decided that she is guilty of this, what effect, if any, will it have on her now that she's been elected?
Part of it would be, the severity of the conflict of interest in this case. My guess is that even if there were a finding of a conflict of interest, it would be not seen as a particularly serious one. The kind of sanction that I would expect in a case like this at most would be some kind of a reprimand, which, it's not something any judge wants to have, but it's not going to have a big impact.
John in Park Falls sent this email. In my opinion, Ziegler won because of her campaign's concentration on the fact that she's a judge and Linda Clifford is not. People I spoke with said they couldn't understand why someone who isn't a judge would run for the high court. This shows a misunderstanding of the workings of the Supreme Court, and of course, there was little in either campaign to set people straight on this issue. What do you think, Professor Kritzer?
Well, I think that is a very interesting observation. The Wisconsin Supreme Court historically has had a large number of people on it who did not come in with judicial experience. Appellate courts more broadly have historically drawn very heavily non-judges to their benches. It's a very different kind of job than deciding cases at the trial level. The most radical development here is the U.S. Supreme Court, where all of the current members of the court came to that to the U.S. Supreme Court from appellate judicial positions. That wasn't the case until the last quarter century or so. And so there is a strong value of having a variety of kinds of experiences and perspectives represented on an appellate court, and particularly on a state, on a Supreme Court, a court of last resort.
Well, Professor Kritzer, thanks so much for being with us. Did I read here that you're leaving UW-Madison after this year?
I am leaving. I'm retiring from University of Wisconsin and actually relocating to Minneapolis-St. Paul, where actually most of my family lives. My wife has been up here for some time, and I'll be taking a position teaching at one of the law schools up here.
Well, I hope you'll still talk with us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'd love to do so.
Thanks a lot. Herb Kritzer, Professor of Political Science and Law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, at least right now. Thanks to Rita Thomas for producing this hour, and to Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.